The following recording was produced by Christ Redeemer Church of Hanover, New Hampshire. The speaker is Doug Cooper. You may find more information on the church and its various resources on the web at www.christredeemerchurch.org.
Today's reading comes from Psalm 37, 3-7 and Romans 12, 9-8. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he will do it. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light, and your judgment as the noonday. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who carries out wicked schemes. And Romans. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor, not lagging behind in diligence. Fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Here ends the reading of God's Word.
Thank you so much, Ian. It's always interesting for me to spend a week in a passage or two, and then for one of you to come up and to read it with the kind of intention that Ian was just reading. It just always strikes me, like every time. So thank you. Here we go. Sorry about that. Let me just begin by telling you what I'm hoping that we can do this morning. Rather than going into like a full-on exposition of the two passages that Ian just read for us, what I'm really hoping to do is for us to just consider one particular aspect that stands out in both of these passages, which you may have already guessed what it is by the title of my message, but it's faithfulness. And so faithfulness is really going to be our theme for today, the whole day, not just the worship service, but our annual meeting as well, which will come right after our worship service. In fact, it's because of the annual meeting that I chose this particular topic of faithfulness. Because as we meet for our annual meeting, the objective always is, it's essentially twofold, that we want to spend time in reflection and we want to spend time about vision. And both of those things, in great part, they've got to do with faithfulness. Because on the one end, we're to be looking back over our shoulders and considering the year that's just gone by and asking ourselves questions like, what happened? Like, what happened back there? What happened last year? What has God been doing? How has God been at work among us? How did God show us his faithfulness over the course of this last year? And then likewise, have we been faithful? Asking that question. How have we done? How have we been good stewards with the gifts and with the resources that God has given us? And so that's all reflection on faithfulness, right? But it's also a time for vision. Asking questions like, in what ways will we look to the Lord and call upon his faithfulness in this coming year? And then likewise asking questions of ourselves, like, how can we improve this next year? What sorts of particulars is God calling us two over the course of this next year. And one of the things that God is always, always, always calling us to, we can count on, is faithfulness, to be found faithful. This is just one of those really, like, most essential, all-pervasive themes that we find in the Bible. But here's a question for you guys, just to get you thinking, just to get the wheels turning on this. What do you think of when you hear that word? What do you think of when you hear the word faithful, or when you hear the word faithfulness? What comes to your mind? How would you describe faithfulness if you were asked to? And for me, you know, there's just words that come to my mind. Things like loyalty, commitment, devotion, right? Obedience, service. I think these are the things that most readily come to mind as we think about faithfulness. But there are other words that maybe don't come to us so immediately. Words like endurance, perseverance, resilience, or perhaps even less obvious than that, with words like patience, contentment, or even worship, right? And I think that all of these things totally apply. And so what's clear here is that faithfulness is, it's a big concept. It's a big thing that we're talking about here. And so, of course, we're not going to tackle all of what faithfulness is this morning. In fact, in light of we're having our annual meeting, my aim is to share a somewhat more abbreviated message than I would normally share. But with that said, we do want to take some time to try to consider and to grow in our understanding of what faithfulness is together this morning. And my hope and my prayer is that as we grow in our understanding of faithfulness, that we will likewise grow in our desire for faithfulness to be, for us, one of those most essential and all-pervasive things in our own lives and in the life of our church. And so here's how I'd like us to come to this. These are just a few guiding questions to lead us along here. So for starters, I think it would be good for us to ask the question, like, what is faithfulness anyways? Like, what is it? What is it in its essence? What are characteristics of faithfulness? And then secondly, what does it look like? In practice, what does faithfulness look like, particularly in the context of the church? What does faithfulness look like? A third question would be, why is it so hard? Why is faithfulness a tough thing? And then lastly, how do we grow in it? How do we grow in faithfulness? As individuals and as a church, how do we grow in faithfulness? So let's begin with what is it? And I think that when it comes to faithfulness, I think that we know it when we hear it. A moment ago, I was just talking about how this is one of those all-pervasive themes that you see throughout the scriptures. So let me just share some examples. And the examples that I'm going to share, a lot of them, they don't even explicitly mention the word faithful or faithfulness in them, but they very much describe faithfulness. They smack of faithfulness. And my hope here is that we'll get a sense of what faithfulness is about, but more than that, that we would get a sense of its place of importance, the kind of importance that God places on faithfulness itself. So for instance, let me just share a few things. So 1 Corinthians chapter 4, this is Paul talking. He says, this is how one should regard us. And when he says, this is how one should regard us, he's speaking of the church, right? So this is how one should regard us, as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required of stewards that they be found faithful. 1 Corinthians 15, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. Or how about 1 Peter? Some of you were with us when we went through 1 Peter, and right in chapter 1, it's just Peter does this beautiful job of describing to us the freeness and the mercy and the graciousness of God's gift to us of salvation in and through Jesus Christ. And then he says this, in this, so he's talking about this salvation, in this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, the proof of your faithfulness, I think you could say, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Or similarly, James chapter 1, maybe this comes to mind. James chapter 1, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. It's one of these words, right? Perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. Is this helpful, me just sharing some of these passages, getting us thinking about it? I've got more. That's why I'm asking. Let me share a couple more. I think this is helpful. How about 1 Timothy chapter 6? Pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. Fight the good fight of faith. Take hold of the eternal life to which you were called. Or James chapter 5. And this gets at that characteristic of patience that's inherent in faithfulness. This is good. James writes, be patient, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Here's one more, the last one here. This comes from Hebrews chapter 12. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance. Are you hearing it? You get the flavor of this? Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, the perfecter of our faithfulness, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And so all these same characteristics that I had mentioned a little while ago, they're all, you could hear them all within some of these passages that I was just sharing. So what is faithfulness? It's commitment and loyalty, right? It's trustworthiness, it's stick-to-itiveness, it's forbearance, it's patience, it's contentment. It's a life of worship. It's all of these things. But I think a helpful thing to consider is that what is it at its very essence? At its very essence, what we need to see is that faithfulness is the very character of God himself. If you were to somehow trace faithfulness all the way back, like if there was a line that you could get your fingers on that was called faithfulness and you could just run along all the way to the end, back to its origin, back to its root, what you would find there is God himself, because God is faithful. This is his very essence. He's wholehearted and he is undivided in his person. He's wholehearted in his commitment to grace, and he is undivided in his commitment to truth. Completely faithful to himself, while somehow at the same time being completely faithful to us. The same yesterday, today, and forever. And so faithfulness is a stability of character. Try to hold on to this here. Faithfulness is a stability of character that reflects the character of God. That's what it is. I love this. Augustine put it like this. And this is printed in the Time of Reflection if you want to track along with this, because it's slightly riddlesome, but worth trying to get a hold of. Augustine says, by faithfulness, we are collected and wound up into unity within ourselves, whereas we had been scattered abroad in multiplicity. Okay? This is such a great insight he's making here. He's saying that to experience and to operate in unison with the faithfulness of the Father is to actually be brought into unity with ourselves. To be sorted out, I guess you could say. Where before we were a disordered mess, as we get in unison with God's faithfulness, it sorts us out. He's saying that in faithfulness, rather than having 1,000 competing affections, we find one in him. And so in faithfulness, we become whole. We become whole in faithfulness. We experience shalom, I guess you could say, but only in relationship to him. So that's what it is, All right? Faithfulness is a stability of character that reflects the character of God and makes us whole. So what does it actually look like? What does it look like? In other words, what does it look like in practice? And you would assume that, this is funny, if we're describing the faithfulness of God, reflecting his character in the essence of God, this is an extraordinary thing that we're talking about, right? He's extraordinary. So you would assume that in practice, faithfulness must entail some really extraordinary stuff, okay? Something really extraordinary. That seems reasonable. But here comes the counterintuitive nature of the gospel, because that's just not the case. Because faithfulness, what it actually looks like in practice, it turns out to be very ordinary. Not extraordinary, but ordinary. And you might find this disappointing. If you do, I would encourage you, hold on to that thought. If the idea of being faithfulness is a simple, ordinary thing, if that disappoints you, hold on to that, because we're going to get there. So look at with me at Romans 12 right now. In this section right here, it may as well have a subtitle above it that says something like faithfulness within the church. I mean, it's just, this passage is that explicit. In fact, I was kind of struck by that, and so I looked at a couple of different Bible versions, because they often have these subtitles. In the NIV, right above verse 9, it says, love in action. If you go to the ESV, it's got a subtitle right above verse 9. It says, marks of the true Christian. And what Paul lays down here, man, like, you couldn't get more plain and practical than what he gives us here. It's just so simple and straightforward. So again, look back with me. I'm looking at verse 10 right now. What does it say? He says, be devoted to one another in love. Give preference to one another in honor. Okay, so translation here for you. Be faithful to one another in love and honor. Be faithful to one another. You want to be faithful to God? Check it out. Be faithful to one another. Verse 11, not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. In other words, what's he saying? Don't be half-hearted about it, okay? Go big or go home. I think is like a modern translation of what Paul's saying here. Be wholehearted towards one another and towards God. Verse 12 and 13. And by the way, I hope that you're realizing as I'm going here, the idea behind this message is, I'm just hoping to be really practical with us as we think about this next year. Practically speaking, what would it look like for us as a church to be faithful? That's really what I'm trying to do. So verse 12 and 13, rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. Do you see what he's talking about here? He's talking about a shared life. A shared life of faithfulness, in which faithfulness is practiced and experienced among one another. Rejoice with those who rejoice, he goes on to say. Weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind towards one another. Be unified. Be harmonious. And then in so many words, the last thing he has to say here is don't be a proud and difficult person. Don't be a stick in the mud. All right? Be respectful. Be peaceable. Reflect the same faithfulness that you have encountered and experienced with the Father. Reflect that. And then here in Psalm 37, we're encouraged to dwell in the land and to cultivate this same sort of a life. That as a group of people, we're to nurture and to develop a life like the one that was just described to us here in Romans chapter 12. Right where we live, right here, right in the Lake Sunapee region. And we're to look for ways for that life, this shared life, to spill over and land on other people, to land on our neighbors, to land on our friends and our coworkers, right? So, no problem, right? We could do this. No problemo. Doug, you could just give your benediction. We could just get out of here now. So we got the gist. Very practical. Thank you. Is it that simple? Is it? No, it's not that simple. This is all very ordinary stuff that Paul is encouraging us in, but it is all extraordinarily hard. Because the idea here is that we are a family. I mean, that's so much of what this language coming from Paul is. You guys are all parts of families, right? How easy is that? How are you guys doing with that? Piece of cake? No problemo? No. It's hard. It's very hard. It's impossible, really. It's impossible what's being asked of us here. So we've talked about what it is. We've talked about what it looks like. But now the question, like, why is it so hard? Why is it so hard to be faithful? And there is plenty things that I could mention here, but I'm thinking we'll just we'll focus on one or two things. And the first one that I've got in mind here is just flowing directly out of what we just looked at in Romans chapter 12. One of the biggest reasons why we struggle at this, why it is so hard for us to be faithful, is that we often attempt to do this alone. We attempt to be faithful alone. We think that faithfulness is this solitary practice. That you know, it's just kind of like, you know, faithfulness, God is simply calling Doug to be faithful. I mean, isn't that the way that we think about it? When somebody talks about being faithful, what's the thought that immediately comes to your mind? Me, how am I doing? Am I being faithful? By myself, am I being faithful? This is the way that we think about it. And this is, you know, such a Western mindset, but it just isn't true. And the proof is in the pudding. It's right here in Romans chapter 12. If you're reading between the lines here, what this spells out for us is that God is concerned with the faithfulness of the church, the whole. I mean, yes, you know, Jesus is, I'm not trying to say that Jesus is not concerned about your personal faithfulness. Yes, Jesus lived and died for me. Yes, Jesus lived and died for you. But the common refrain throughout the New Testament is that Jesus lived and died for the church, for what he calls his bride, that it's bigger than just me. It's bigger than just you. And so just like Paul is spelling out for us in the most plain and practical language that he can muster up here, a life of faithfulness is about a life of shared faithfulness among us, faithfulness that is practiced and experienced together. Be devoted to one another in love. Prefer one another in honor. Meet one another's needs. Rejoice together. Weep together. Do you want to be faithful to God? I mean, really, do you? Do you want to be faithful to God? Do you want to know how to demonstrate your commitment to him? Right here, we have one of the most primary ways that God has given us to do that. And here's how. We're to be faithful and committed to one another. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, this is scary. And I agree. All right? This is scary. And you might even be thinking, yeah, but I'm not particularly crazy about a lot of these people. All right? They're not necessarily all of them my kind of people. In fact, I find some of them to be a bit too ordinary. In fact, I find a lot of this stuff that you're talking about to be just a little bit too ordinary. And so here is another hard place. This is the other hard place that I've got in mind here. Here's another thing that makes faithfulness tough, that not only do we want to go it alone a lot of the time, but that we also want to experience the extraordinary. We're happy to be faithful as long as there's a little bit of action and excitement involved. Give me a little bit of glitz, you know. Show me something here. Michael Horton, he's a contemporary and author and a professor of theology at Westminster Seminary in California. He wrote this great little book that I would recommend to you called Ordinary, Sustainable Faith in a Radical, Restless World. And in it he said this. And just as I'm saying this, just notice how he manages to take these two things that I'm mentioning here, this idea of going it alone and this great desire, this push we have to experience the extraordinary, he pulls both of those things together in this quote. In many ways, it's more fun to be part of movements than churches. We can express our own individuality, pick our favorite leaders, and be swept off our feet at conferences. We can be anonymous. Although encouraged by like-minded believers, we are not bound up with them so that we should feel compelled to bear their burdens or suffer their rebukes. I mean, think about that in light of what we were just reading in Romans 12. Yet this movement mentality keeps us restless and makes ordinary life in and submission to an actual church seem intolerably confining and terribly ordinary. In another place, he says this: facing another day with ordinary callings to ordinary people all around is much more difficult than chasing my own dreams that I have envisioned for the grand story of my life. Can you identify with that struggle? I mean, I think that we all can, probably, this movement mentality. I think in different ways we're all up against this, because think about this. It's just in the water, isn't it? It's just, this mentality, it's just in the water. In fact, this is a pretty easy thing to identify with in our smartphone blogosphere universe that we're all, many of us are swimming in on a regular basis. Okay, because so much of our relationship to the internet encompasses these two things. Think about this. That the internet, it has a way of luring us into a much more solitary life experience than we would have otherwise. And I'm not downing the internet, by the way. You know, I enjoy it just as much as the next guy. I appreciate so many things that it brings about. So I'm trying to just make an observation here. Because really, think about this. It's this the internet, it's this vast universe that is at the tips of our fingers at any given moment that we can pull up and just sovereignly navigate. I mean, this is power. This is a great power that we possess that I think that it's kind of gotten lost on us over the time. We can do this all by our lonesome, and it has a way of subtly reinforcing this thing that I'm talking about, this solitary mentality. And then the other thing about the internet is that it endlessly entices us to seek after the extraordinary. You guys have this experience? Am I the only one? You guys ever, you know, find your way down like a hobby rabbit hole in the internet? You know what I'm talking about? You, for me, it's music. I start, you know, searching out a particular topic. And it's like infinite. You just keep going and going. And it's really hard to pull yourself back out once you're in. And I think that, for me, it's this kind of like nagging idea that if I keep at this, if I keep looking, eventually I'm going to encounter something extraordinary. You know, I'm going to find that song. I'm going to find that obscure band out there that nobody's ever heard of. It's going to be great. So I got to keep going, and you just get lost down there. It's like Wonderland? Help me. It's like it's like down the hole, you know. But the point here is that this solitary sovereign self that I've just been describing for us, that's always on the lookout, always searching for the extraordinary, always searching for something more impressive, more captivating. That mentality, that person, is at great odds with what God is calling us to in faithfulness. Do you see that? Because if that's where you live, then this business of a shared and ordinary life, it's going to sound really unpleasant. It's going to sound very lame. And yet this is the very life that God is calling each of us to. So in other words, as far as God is concerned, this right here, okay, like this, us, here. As far as God's concerned, this is where the action is. This is where it's at for him. In a shared, common, and at times mundane life of sacrificial faithfulness. This is God's big idea. This is his big idea. I mean, just listen to the words of Jesus for a second. John 13:35. He says, "By this everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." Like, really? Like, that's the big reveal, Jesus. Love? Like, couldn't you have given us something with a little more pizzazz? But check this out. If you're thinking about this in the right way, thinking about what it really means to dwell in the land and to cultivate faithfulness, to cultivate this ordinary sort of life together, then you'll get a sense of how extraordinary that actually is. Because when Jesus said this, that what I just read to you, when he said this, what I believe he was imagining was people from both sides of the aisle coming together, people from every tribe, tongue, and nation coming together and suddenly showing one another real love, being devoted to one another in love, preferring one another in honor, in a segregated, splintered, rivalry-oriented culture. That's what he was imagining, okay? Unlikely friendships, these little holy pockets of bipartisanship and tripartisanship and however far you can go with that, okay? And now think about this. Here we are, okay? Think about the culture that we live in. Man, talk about splintered. We live in an outrageously splintered and tribal world. Now more than ever, we've got, and this may be to do with our interconnectedness, we've got groups within groups. We've got schisms within our schisms, right? And then we've got all these endless media sources that are out there who are giving commentary, giving you the run-on about all of the disputes, all of the tensions that exist. And so in these sorts of conditions, a shared, simple, even mundane love and devotion that's being cultivated, that's being nurtured, that's being developed, can suddenly become a very unique thing and a powerful reveal. I think this is what Jesus had in mind. Like, this is powerful. This ordinary thing that I'm calling you to, it's extraordinary. It's got some pizzazz. And you might be thinking to yourself, come on, Doug. In rural New England? Really? You think so? Yeah. Yeah. In rural New England. Yeah. But how in the world does this work? Because we've talked about this already. Faithfulness is hard. Faithfulness is hard. And it's tough for a lot more reasons than I gave us. There's a lot more. We just don't have time for it. But coming into our last question here, how do we grow in this kind of faithfulness? How do we become faithful people who love like this? And there is a lot of irony here, I think. Because the thing that's often hard about faithfulness, and we've already talked about this, is that we want to go it alone. We want to keep our options open. We want to maintain enough freedom and control so that if things get kind of stuffy, things get kind of cramped, we can split. You know, we can cut out. We don't want to get tied down by a bunch of ordinary people doing ordinary things. That just doesn't sound very significant. It doesn't sound very interesting to us, you know? I mean, it's not tweet worthy. It's not, you know, worthy of a status update or something like that. And yet, what's more, think about this, what is more endearing than loyalty, than ordinary loyalty? What's more endearing than that? What's more endearing than friends who are devoted to us, showing us preference? Having friends who know us in our absolute worst moments, and yet who wholeheartedly tell us things like, hey, I am with you. I'm for you. I'm in it with you. Count me in. Wild horses couldn't drag me away. We hope for that sort of thing. In fact, at the end of the day, flip side of this, what's our greatest fear? What are we afraid of more than anything else? We're afraid of being alone. We're afraid of being insignificant. I mean, do you see how ironic this is? Our greatest fear is that we'll be nobodies who will find ourselves all alone, unseen, unwanted, unpursued, unknown, unloved. That's the thing that we're afraid of. And yet, what is the bottom line concerning the faithfulness of God towards us? What has he done? What has he shown us? It's this, that we hold such significance by his estimation, all right? We hold such significance by his estimation that he's left heaven, he's clothed himself with flesh, and he has embraced a gruesome death just so that we would never be alone ever again. I mean, come back to John 14. We spent weeks in this. What did Jesus say there? He said, fear not. Let not your hearts be troubled, for I go to prepare a place for you that where I am, you may be also, so that you never have to be alone ever again. Or what did Jesus say to his friends? The last thing that he said to them. He said, surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. You're not alone. Just in case you thought you might be, you're not. Hebrews 13, God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. So we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can mere mortals do to me? So how do we grow in faithfulness? How do we grow in faithfulness as individuals? How do we grow in faithfulness as a church? What is it that will make us faithful people who embrace sacrificial mundane love? What's going to do that for us? And the answer is simple and yet extraordinary. It's simple yet extraordinary. It comes by encountering and experiencing the faithfulness of God to you, to us. Faithfulness is the fruit of the Spirit that is imparted to us as we encounter and experience the faithfulness of God to us. Always, 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 always. This will always be the case. The only thing that can produce true and lasting faithfulness in us as a people and as a church is knowing and experiencing God's faithfulness to us, being completely awestruck by it, being totally undone by his faithfulness again and again, that he's devoted himself to us in love, even to the point of death, that he shows preference to us in honor, while at the same time knowing exactly who we are, knowing how unfaithful we are, how unfaithful we are at the very core of our hearts. Am I exaggerating about this? About us being unfaithful at the very core of our hearts? Man, read the Old Testament sometime. That's us. That's a picture of us. It's a story about us. What's so hard about faithfulness? We are. That's what's so hard about faithfulness. It's us. The tough thing about faithfulness is that we're so completely devoted to ourselves and so undevoted to one another. And we hope that nobody finds out about it. We don't want anybody to know. And he pursued us just like that. He showed up. He showed up on your worst day. Okay? He gazed upon your darkest day, your darkest hour, and said, here I come. I'm coming. And once you know that, you can't shake it. I mean, once you really know that for yourself, just when you get a sense of just how absolutely ugly and how absolutely beautiful it is, you'll never get over it. And it holds the power and it holds the potential to produce faithfulness in you. Love, right? To produce love. And it's meant to happen here, right here. Now, will we ever be all together, wholeheartedly, undividedly committed to one another in the kind of ways that I'm talking about here? No, not in this life anyways. But he has been, and he is, and that makes all the difference, okay? All the difference in the world. So in closing, here's what we're aiming for this next year together. That we would be found faithful. Faithful to embrace the extraordinary love of Jesus, and then faithful to cultivate and share that love in ordinary ways with ordinary people in the ordinary flow of our lives. We're seeking to be faithful in that kind of a way this year. Let me pray for us. Father, help. Would you help us? And if, for so many reasons, I fear that this just goes right over our heads. And God, would you cause us to be a faithful people? And would you do it by imparting to us in greater measures an apprehension of your faithfulness to us, of your posture towards us, of your commitment to us, your devotion to us, your patience with us. Would you help us to get a bigger clue about it And would you allow that to make us a faithful people? And would you cause us to be a group of people that are extraordinary, extraordinary in their ordinary love for one another, that we would be devoted to one another in love, that we would prefer one another in honor, that we would seek to care for one another, that we would weep together, that we would rejoice together. This must be a work of your Spirit. We ask that you would do it. In Jesus' name, amen.